Well, Emily kind of stole my introduction of myself or why I'm here, but I just wanted to thank you all for allowing me to be here this morning. And when I met Emily, Pastor Emily, back in June, we have been online friends for quite a while. I met Caleb in 2019 at the Creation Care Luncheon, and I added him on Facebook, and then I saw like his wife, and I was like, oh, she seems great, so I added her as well. And then we've been friends on Facebook since then, and I've seen Caleb around, and then I saw him at General Assembly, and I was like, Emily. And I just felt this kinship with Emily very immediately. It kind of felt like I always knew her. And so I never imagined after that meeting that I would actually stand before you guys, which feels like very soon afterwards as well. It's just October, and that was in June. But I've been so encouraged by Emily's affirmation and naming of my call to ministry from the moment that she exclaimed, girl, I think you need to preach a sermon. And so here we are, and I couldn't be happier to preach for the first time in probably 10 years since I left the idea of pastoral ministry behind. But I have felt the graciousness of God ever so gently pulling me back into a calling I wasn't even sure that I wanted, still not quite sure. it's scary. But I think that being a part of the story of God brings us these moments of participation in such unexpected ways. And so today I want to talk to you about this concept of journeying towards the promises of God. So I'm talking about the Exodus passage that we read this morning, where we find the Israelites in the text at a place in time where they're feeling hopeless and impatient. This is not a new feeling for them. In fact, ever since God's promise to Abraham that his descendants would be God's chosen people, the Israelites, which is what we've come to know them in this generation of Abraham's descendants, have found themselves waiting on the promises of freedom and blessing. They've been liberated through Moses, and they're on this journey toward the land that is flowing with milk and honey, where they are God's and God is theirs. But the problem is, this promised land just does not seem to be manifesting. They're waiting and wandering, following Moses, who has also never laid eyes on this supposed promised land, and they're getting impatient. They're tired. They've been going on this journey in stages, it says. So they've been stopping and setting up camp and surviving on what they can find there, then on to the next stopping point, and they're just walking and walking and following towards this end that is not anywhere in sight. They've just come off a leg of their journey in chapter 16, which we read a little bit of, where they're hungry again and complaining to Moses, just like they are in this passage. And so God brings them manna and quail, just as much as they need for each day, even providing on the sixth day what they'll need for the seventh and allowing them to experience Sabbath. What I want to note briefly about that chapter is that there's a lot of evidence to suggest that the manna they were given was from a natural plant that grows a substance in the dew each morning that can be used for bread. People use it for bread and they call it manna. But at night, insects feed on it, using, you know, creation for their own needs. And in that story, with the manna, they experienced very intentional daily offering through nature that God provided for their daily needs. They learned that God was in the everyday providing through creation. So naturally, they immediately forget this when they find themselves hangry and thirsty as they wander in this new stage of their journey. They are so consumed by the groaning of their bellies and the frustration of this unending journey that they even start to suggest that Moses might have well just left them in Egypt because they're pretty sure they're going to die out here. It's so relatable, though, right? My husband often tells me that I have the memory of a goldfish. I forget important things just as easily as I forget someone's name in the 5 seconds after they introduce themselves to me. Bless you. I think I experience this ongoing lack of memory as a result of some trauma that I have experienced in my life. The full story is one for another time, but I'll say that as a child, I was often in the hospital and regularly underwent procedures in which I was put under anesthesia and woke up to relieved parents, so thankful that I was okay. I found myself in more emergency vehicles than any child and teenager deserves. And this fear for my physical body became a consuming anxiety that led to PTSD and depression, and more low lows than I can count. Moments where no matter how many times I was told that I am safe now, My body and brain just could not adjust to this idea of deliverance. And it really was a deliverance. I mean, it was truly a miracle how God used an incredible doctor that we almost found kind of randomly to surgically create a solution using veins already present in my body that could be refurbished, if you will, to perform a different task as the rest of my body adjusted easily to the change, and then the ecosystem inside of me worked again in harmony. But my brain couldn't heal just as easily as my body, so I've gone years of my life in deep depressions, which is known to cause memory loss. I truly have years of my life I only remember bits and pieces of, because my brain was so stuck in survival mode with anxiety, or shutting down to sleep 16 hours a day because I was too depressed to function. And if I struggled to adjust to my own new story of healing and restoration over the years of getting my brain on the same page as my body, how much more would a people who have only known slavery and masters and their life not being their own for generations? So what does God do with this stubborn memory loss and difficulty finding themselves in this new story? God sees them in their need for remembrance of what is coming. God responds to this ache within them that says they are better left for dead than to continue on this journey that feels like it will never end. God says to Moses, I will go before you. I will stand with you, and I will show the Israelites that I can make the impossible possible. Water from a rock, not from the ground, not from trees, not from a plant that captures water in its trunk to survive in the desert. But this gracious and compassionate response from God is a reminder in this text and in so many stories to come that God sees us in our need and shows us that forgetting we are caught up in this story is not a moral failure. Often we look at texts like these and the Israelites see the Israelites as whiny or lacking in faith, but God seems to treat their groaning as an opportunity to provide. Because it's natural and understandable to have moments of thirst and loss of hope when living in a world where suffering exists. Their needs and their cries do not signify lack of faith. Their need for water and their anguish on the journey signify the very real moments of our lives where we lose sight of what is ahead because our current circumstance is too much to bear. And so God says to Moses, I will use you. I will use the staff that you used on the day of their liberation, and I will remind you that we are caught up in a new story. You're part of a story, a narrative that I've woven all of creation to partake in. I will use my people and I will use my creation to create life where there is none. I will create possibility where there seems to be no hope. And if you just look ahead, you will see that I want every ounce of my creation to be a part of the promise that you're seeking. And so they drink the water and they continue their journey. And eventually the Israelites reach the promised land. But it doesn't stop there. For years and years, though they try to send it down through descendants of the provision of God, like we see in the psalm, they will continue to forget and lose their memory. They will worship a golden calf, forgetting that they serve a much greater God. They will build huge temples to worship God, and then they'll use them to cause each other harm. They will build walls, and they'll begin to draw lines to mark themselves as in and mark those who are different as out. And there will come a day that God sends his son in the form of flesh, another gracious response, reminding them again that the kingdom of God is about participation and journeying always toward the promise and bringing people along on the way. But they will forget. They'll watch Jesus perform miracles just as God did at the rock. And they'll be so consumed with their own narrative that they forget that God is in the business of providing where there seems to be no provision. In the Matthew passage that we read today, they were so consumed by their own needs and desires for stability and reliance on what they have come to know that they will again ask, is God even among us when Jesus is physically present with them? They question, by what authority does Jesus disrupt their system? And Jesus lets them know that somewhere in their journey, they have chosen not to go out into the field and do the work their Father has asked. They've become bystanders who have stopped along their journey towards God's promises because they no longer feel need. They've become arrogant instead of poor in spirit, and it has blinded them from seeing that God is right there in front of them, doing the work of provision for the thirst they have forgotten since the wilderness. And again, what does God do in response? God is gracious. God continues using what already is and brings it into the fullness of what can be, all moving forward to the promise of God, which is presence and total completeness, total liberation and abundance of life. He sends Jesus and then accepts the rejection of Jesus at the crucifixion and again opens up the door for us to receive life, even after subjecting God's own flesh to death. God performs a miracle, and Jesus walks out of the tomb on the third day to proclaim that God is still present and meeting God's people on their journey. They may have wandered again and found themselves thirsty for sustenance, and God provides it through the miracle of resurrection, an invitation to participate when Jesus meets Mary and Martha and tells them to go tell everyone that God continues to promise to make a way toward the liberation of humanity and from that which holds us down. I have seen this in my own life, as God has been gracious in creating abundance of joy in the form of people who love me and to myself, in the form of a few small pills I take each morning to help my brain remember, through my therapist helping me retrain my brain, and even through this calling to shepherd others in their own journey in the wilderness. Sometimes I still see myself wondering if it would be easier to give up because I get tired of the medication, the time I spend in therapy. I get tired of the loss I feel when I forget something that was important to me, knowing it is a remnant of the depression which held me captive for so long. It is easier to just beg someone to provide for me like the Israelites with Moses. But I press on, and I watch for the places God stands before me and makes water come from a rock. I look for what creation is doing around me, and I seek to become a part of that narrative and leave the one of my past behind. When we read the Philippians passage, I want us to see that to be a part of this story, it means to be a part of each other and to work together to follow Jesus and the fact that Jesus emptied himself and became one with us, not feeling like he was more than us, but journeying with us. And when we take communion today, I want us to be reminded of the story of which we are a part when we participate in communion. Through the taking and eating of the body, may we be reminded that Christ became part of his creation in the form of flesh and bone. And when we partake in the drinking of the blood, may we be reminded that to be a part of this story is to remember that where we see death and hopelessness, God creates life and propels us further toward the promise of abundance, liberation from what makes us forget, and wholeness with creation and God. May this gracious gift of sacrament push us further through the thirsty moments of the wilderness into the miracle of water from the rock. Amen.